Good evening. Let's bring this meeting to order. Champaign County Board, Community Health for Finance, Policy, and Justice. Today is Tuesday, February 15, 2011, time is 6:05. I'd like to point out that the reason the meeting is so late because the Republicans were not here on time. The Democrats were here in force, and they put out that both caucuses met at the same time within this building. So, nonetheless, we're waiting for you. Roll call, please.
Alex.
Here.
Ammon.
Here.
Anderson.
Here.
Benzel.
Here.
Berkson.
Here.
Betts.
I am here.
Carter. Coert. Holderfield.
Here.
James.
Here.
Jay.
Here.
Jones.
Here.
Knott.
Here.
Kurtz.
Yes.
Langenheim.
Here.
McGinty.
Here.
Michael.
Here.
Mosier. Nudo.
Here.
O'Connor. O'Connor.
I see Mr. O'Connor here. He's not in the building right now. He's not in the room right now.
Quisenberry.
Here.
Richards.
Here.
Rosales.
Here.
Sapp.
Here.
Schrader. Weibel.
Here. Quorum, quorum. Seek approval of the minutes for the Community Hall of January 18, 2011. So moved by Rosales.
Second.
Second by Mr. James. Comments? See none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Seek approval of the agenda and the addendum. Moved by Mr. Langenheim, second by Ms. Ammons. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Public participation. Nobody has indicated to me that they wish to speak. Is there anybody who wishes to speak during public participation? Seeing none, we'll move on to communications from the board. Ms. Holderfield.
I would just like to remind everyone that this Friday, the IHSA wrestling tournament begins at the Assembly Hall. So if you're out and about, stop in. I'll be there Friday night. Watch out for the traffic.
Is Patsy.
I have an information question. You were rolling through the items so quickly. I missed on the minutes. I have a couple of corrections. Can I hand them in later?
What kind of corrections are they? Are they like typos?
No.
Well, we have a motion to reconsider. We'll open up the minutes for discussion. Is there a motion?
I move to open up.
Moved by Mr. Rosales, or a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Betts, was it?
No.
By Ms. Berkson. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Ms. Peachy, go ahead.
Okay, there are two quick items. One is on page 8. It has to do with
what line number, please?
331, auditor, purchases not filing, purchasing policy. There was a bit of a discussion when that was handed out with the auditor that resulted in his adding another column to his monthly document indicating the date the departments received the bills.
There was none under that item at that point.
What line number is that?
Well, it's also 331, but I thought that was the meeting we discussed that.
Mr. Fabry spoke during public presentation.
Right, and I asked him those questions.
Well, I'll be under public participation then, is it there?
So it's 5:50.
The recording starting during the
second. Yeah. It does have him on in the public participation.
Right. So there will be no notation in the minutes that they add?
The minutes are the minutes incorrect? And first of all, is this an action item that will have impact? So that's sort of what you have to judge it upon.
Yes. Well,
we can add all the details you want, so we have verbatim, but I don't think we're going to do that.
I wasn't asking for verbatim. I was asking that it be noted that this was something the auditor agreed to do, and it is.
Okay. I will point out that I was on the recording of this meeting, so it is recorded so we know about it now, certainly.
Okay. And then the other one, I am on page 9, line 78. I thought it was Ms. Michaels, not Ms. Ammons, who asked for the detailing of the money.
What line?
78.
378.
No. Oh, I'm sorry, 378. My book was folded over. I apologize.
Ms. Michaels, would you comment on that?
Not every question asked is recorded in minutes.
It is recorded that I said it, but it wasn't for me.
It is, informational.
But Carol said something about it.
Okay.
Well, I would ask Ms. Ford if you could perhaps review this one area.
Okay, thank you very much for letting me reopen that. That's it.
Okay, all in favor of approving the minutes?
Okay.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, other communications. I would announce that Champaign County now has a population census of over 200,000. Officially today. Deb has something to say.
I don't know. If you want, for those of you who remember, we, about a year ago, approved a contract with CGI Communications, which cost the county nothing, to have 10 60-second videos created introducing Champaign County and promoting Champaign County. Those videos have, in the last week, been posted on our website, so I just pointed out to you that you may want to go and look at them. Thanks.
Deb, are they in a particular part of our website?
When you open the county website, it says movie video tour. You click on that, okay. And it takes you to the location where the 10 videos are hosted.
Thank you. Mr. Noodle.
Piggyback on Mr. Weibel's comments. That means then that the census data is out and
out.
Our redistricting committee can begin their work.
Okay, Nursing Home Board of Directors, the fiscal year 2010 annual report. This was to be a PowerPoint presentation, but the equipment failed to arrive. So we're doing it the old-fashioned way. You have handouts in front of you, and we'll go from there. Okay. One more thing, please turn down your cell phones.
Okay, good evening. My name is Michael Scavato, and I'm sharing the podium with Mary Ellen O'Shaughnessy, the chair of the Nursing Board of Directors, and I'll be working off substantially the same set of slides that you have in front of you. I'll go first, Mary Ellen will go second, and we'll leave as much time for questions as we as possible, as you want. So, first of all, we're going to start off with a recap of fiscal 2010, which should be the second slide, which starts out showing that we were profitable in 2010, but we're still short on cash. And I think the thing I'd like to highlight on the slide here is that the first full year of our work at Champaign County, we reported a net loss of about $1.8 million. The second year, we had improved that to a loss of $150,000, and this year, we're profitable to the tune of about $200,000. And I expect that number to hold up after adjustments. We've made some adjustments in the last week since this slide was prepared, and I'm pretty comfortable saying that we're going to be around $200,000. So in a short period of time, we've come from a long way down to having broken through the profitability line. Now, it's important to note that we're profitable, but we're still short on cash. And one of the reasons for that is that we are still in in the throes of resolving an intergovernmental agreement between the state of Illinois and the federal government. We're powerless in that transaction, but we certainly hope that it goes through. So just for the sake of illustration, if we're entitled to 100 as a daily rate, we're only getting 75. And that difference is the reason why we're short on cash. As a practical matter, I think we're recording our Medicaid rate somewhere around $133 or so, and we're only being reimbursed about $115. So it's quite on the volume of Medicaid that we have, that represents quite a bit of business, and that's one of the reasons why we're still short on cash. So if you go to the next slide, we talk about the inpatient volume for this current year, 2011. The volume indicators that you see there are the same as for 2010. We want to hit an ADC, which is an average daily census of 195 residents. We managed to hit that in 2010. We think we can replicate that in 2011. Our occupancy overall would be about 80%. And the percentages of the patient population you see below, 35% private pay, 50% Medicaid, 15% Medicare. We're hoping to do a little bit better on Medicare volume than we did this year. That's certainly a stretch for us. There's no guarantee that we'll get there, but we're going to give it a shot. We are totally dependent upon the discharge activity at the hospitals for that volume, as are all of the other skilled facilities in the area. If you go to the next slide, budgeted volume 2011, I think you'll see right off the bat that Medicaid continues to be our dominant payer, averaging about 98, sometimes more than 100 patients in the course of a day. We believe that our Medicare admissions and length of stay can be improved, and that will have a positive revenue effect. We are seeing some issues develop with our dementia program, and dementia is a program that's desperately needed in the community. We have a good one. It's running close to maximum capacity. And if you were to say to the nursing home today, you know, you've got a spare $5 million, what would you do with it? We'd probably add another dementia unit to it. And we don't have that luxury. But just so you know, the demand is running high on dementia. It's likely to continue to be high, and it can get it can even get more than what we've got and we'd like to have. Private pay is a pretty healthy 68 residents on the course of a day, and that's really not a bad mix for a facility like Champaign County. If you go to the next slide, operating revenues, the main takeaway from this slide is the base business, which is illustrated as patient service revenues, just over $14 million. No matter how you look at this, you're running a sizable operation here. $14 million is nothing to sneeze at, and it keeps growing, although this year it is probably going to grow more slowly than in the past, because we're seeing real challenges with government reimbursement. We're not projecting any increase in our Medicaid reimbursement, nor are we hoping for any increases in our Medicare reimbursement. We'd like to see the reverse situation, but the signs are just not very positive for continued reimbursement. Talk about this a little bit more under major issues for 2011. And there are some red flags on your slides for a reason. Since October of 2009, we have been operating under an intergovernmental agreement between the state and the feds that has been in the process of restructuring. It's been very painful. It's been slow, just because nothing's happened. The state, for good reason, has had other priorities in the nursing homes. And finally, they're getting around to the county facilities, and there are signs of progress. We know that there have been amendments to the state plan, the state Medicaid plan submitted to Washington. We know that there are conversations going back and forth between the state agency and the federal agency, and the lobbyists that we are talking with indicate that there is progress. It is painfully slow. If we get the intergovernmental agreement resolved, there should be a significant boost in cash flow for Champaign County and for all the other county nursing homes that are out there suffering under the payment freeze on reimbursement. So that's something that, from my perspective, is a huge priority, and it is something that frees up a lot of cash and makes the profitability a lot more real. Right now we're profitable, but we're still suffering from bad cash flow, and we're doing better, but we could be doing more strong if we had the intergovernmental agreement resolved. We are dealing with a possible increase in the bed tax. Right now we pay $1.50 a day for every bed that's licensed. There has been legislation recently passed to increase that tax by over $6 a day. That is a significant increase in our expenses. The flip side of that is that the bed tax is used to fund a different Medicaid reimbursement system, which works to our advantage. That advantage is not built into the budget because there's no assurance that the federal government will approve the increase in the bed tax. Illinois is implementing what's on your slides called DRA, stands for the Deficit Reduction Act of 2005. Illinois is one of the last states to implement those rules. These rules could prove to be quite problematic for all Medicaid providers because of the way the penalties are structured. We can go into that in more detail if you want, but I think the takeaway from this is that we are facing a potential regulatory imposition here that restricts our Medicaid reimbursements even further than they are already. Medicare has introduced a new coding system. We are doing okay with it. We are learning as we go. We believe that we can maintain our current Medicare reimbursement. We're not at all convinced that we can get above that. And that's one of the reasons why we've kept that projection flat in the budget. We did manage to increase the private pay rates. We're still needing tax anticipation warrants. And I would say that the nursing home, like all health care providers, is going to face an increasingly complex regulatory environment. And in particular, with Medicare and Medicaid, under non-labor expenses, you can see what the budget contains. The biggest item that fluctuates each month is that the last item there, agency expense for contract labor. And that is one thing that if we could eliminate any particular expense, that would be one to go for. We just don't have the staffing yet to do that. And this is, it just fluctuates with the allocation of benefit expenses. We have a month with a lot of holidays. We have a month with a lot of time off. We have a month with a lot of vacation. We're going to have agency expense, which gets to be expensive. On labor expenses, there's nothing new there, and benefit costs have gone up from their current levels. This current budget is up from 29 to 34% of salaries as far as benefits go. I'm sure that that's not new to you, particularly with IMRF and health insurance costs being what they are. The next slide is the productivity gains. And this is great news. When you take a look at where we were coming from and where we are now, there have been significant gains in productivity. And by that, I mean unscheduled absences. They're here. They're working at the nursing home more than they were before. And I've got a slide here that shows you the extent of the reduction. If you take a look at the slide, productivity gains by the numbers, you can see that we were down 229 in 08, down to 154 in fiscal 2010. That's a change of over 33%. And that is a significant factor that allows us to keep our agency costs lower. They're still too high. We'd like to get them lower still. But this is a concerted effort by a lot of people that want to see the nursing home do better. And it's working out. And the final slide is a recap of how we anticipate the fiscal year to go from the budget standpoint. I'd like to be forecasting a little bit better, but I just don't think the revenues are going to be there from the government reimbursement, so we're taking a conservative position with the budget. We know that we're standing on our own, and I think that we've broken through this year in terms of profitability. We're managing the cash flow, and love to have more cash to pay off some of the obligations that are still outstanding. And with that, Mariella, turn it over to you.
Well, time flies when you're having fun. It's been, I think many of you can remember me waving my hands and being a little obnoxious at meetings when this all started. But I can honestly say this has been one of the best experiences of my life, and I feel like I'm working with some of the most talented people both on the board and with the staff at the County Nursing Home and MPA. We started meeting in May of 2008. What I think is important about this board and what I've been impressed is that the experience and expertise on that board comes from healthcare, human resources, nursing home management, and financial management. So we have everything we need. I have to admit, I don't speak money very well, but we have Pete Chakowski there. We have an Al Nudo. I mean, human resources, that's something that I've done for years, so I can cover that. We have Jan Anderson. We have LaShonda. We have just a great board. I can't tell you enough, and I've served on a number of boards. The current members are Jan Anderson, Pete Jakowski, LaShonda Hambrick, Jason Hirschbrenner, Dr. Robert Palinkas, who's the head of the University Student Health Center, is our newest member, Al Nudo, and myself. Now, most of you remember when we took over, there were four issues. There were probably more, but there were four key issues that we really felt that we needed to address. And the first was financial, because we need to have the money to run the home. And as you just heard from Mike, that really has taken a turn for the better. I would say we're not out of the woods, we're on the edge of the woods. Every month brings challenges. I think one month just recently we had a pretty high cost of agency nurses. It caught us by surprise. I can't tell you how complicated running this nursing home is. I don't know why anyone would want to do this, because with the federal and the state regulation, the constant changing financial picture, it really is difficult. So financially, I think we're in a much better place than we were 3 years ago. We certainly had some staff that was very unhappy with the situation they were working in, and we took that very seriously, and I just think we have a talented, loyal, and experienced staff. The reason I wanted to serve on this board is about 10 years ago, I did some consulting. I do some private consulting. And one of the agencies or one of the groups we did consulting with was the Champaign County Nursing Home. And I was so impressed with the employees that came to that. I mean, so impressed. And every one of them had to come through the training, and they were really, really fabulous. And so that's one of the reasons it left me with good memories, that this is an organization I want to be involved with. In my estimation, the staff is talented, loyal. What we've done is the number of grievances have dropped. We are providing training, addressing performance problems in a constructive manner, and we put in place a number of programs to reward our employees for doing well. And just recently, again, I want to say that our staff, when we were having the storm and people couldn't get here, we had members of the staff that were staying more shifts, working more shifts, and we publicly thanked them. If you go to the nursing home in the front hallway, all their names are there, and there's a lot of names. I mean, the staff really stepped up to take care of the residents. The census was a problem. When we took over, the census was 143. I came up with, when I looked at the numbers today, the average is 197 for the last 13 18 months. We talked last night about we'd like to get that over 200. It's been over 200, but again, it depends on what's happening in the hospitals in terms of what's happening in the home in terms of getting patients. And then the IDPH complaint cycle, which was pretty regular and pretty severe, that really has turned around as well. So I guess I can safely say that by all measures, we're doing a lot better than we were 3 years ago. But I will tell you, the metaphor I use, it's like juggling knives, is that there's just so much going on in the nursing care industry. There's so much going on just if you go into the home with the patients, their stature, the families, that you're just hoping you hit the, you get the handles and not the blade every day because you just never know. I want to say a word about working with MPA. It is clear to me that the progress we have made is heavily influenced by the board's decision, and that would be your decision, to enter into a management agreement with Management Performance Associates. Mike Scavato, who's the president, has been working closely with us for the last 3 years to build an organization that provides excellent care and operates in a financially responsible way. Mr. Scavato provides monthly management financial reports to the board. In between the meetings, he keeps us apprised of information we need to be aware of, and often we get articles from him that have to do with the healthcare industry. He's helped us understand what it is, what it means to run a nursing home. When asked for data, he provides it, and when I come home from one of my Tuesday night book groups and fire off a demanding, sometimes terse email based on something one of my members has said, he responds the next day with a plan of action. When we have asked the hard questions, he does not shy away from the discussion and meets our concerns with a willingness to listen and change course if necessary. I really think it's been key to turning this around. You can't run a nursing home in this day and age with the small staff we were running it. It's just impossible. And I think everyone stepped up. In conclusion, what I want to say is we're just all thankful that you gave us the opportunity to serve as advisors to you. It's, again, been a great experience. We have a lot of good time. We have a lot of good discussions. Alan Nudo and I argue on a regular basis. Well, so do I, so it's a perfect match. So, again, if you have any questions, I think all of us have really, really enjoyed, I guess not all of it, but enjoyed serving on the nursing home board. So thank you.
Okay, questions. I have one quick question for Michael. The average headcount was, what, 195 last year? What are you, or something like that? 197. What are you budgeting for this next year?
195.
195, okay. So basically
same.
Flat.
Same.
Okay.
Right.
Other questions? Ms. Petrie.
Yes, I would like to deepen my understanding and appreciation of the difficulty of this intergovernmental agreement between the state and the federal level. Could you go into a little bit more detail so we could all understand why an intergovernmental agreement exists, first of all, and then the ramifications thereof?
I'll do the best I can.
Thank you.
All right. So, and I'll try to do the Reader's Digest version. The IGT, Intergovernmental Transfer, came about, I think, in 2007. And it was the brainchild of the state HFS, the state Medicaid agency, then Illinois Public Aid. And the idea was that because county homes were government entities, they qualified for some additional federal money. And now the feds had to agree to that. But intergovernmental transfers are common, and there's thousands of them out there. This was the first time that the county homes had any input into it. So that was a significant increase in Medicaid reimbursement designed to recognize the additional costs that counties had over non-governmental entities. If you look at the statistics, there's some basis for that opinion, particularly because of your exposure to IMRF is one example, and you do have overhead that gets allocated to the nursing home cost structure. That does create higher costs that usually are not recognized in the normal Medicaid standard rate. That program continued until October of 2009. And I'm fuzzy on why it ended.
there was a legal reason for it to be restructured. The program could continue, but it had to be restructured to meet new federal requirements. And at that point, that's where we slowed down. So the structure of the rate, the structure of the reimbursement was something that all county homes had grown accustomed to since 2007. They were all accounting for it the same way. But according to CMS, the Federal Medicare and Medicaid Services Agency, the rate structure needed to change. And at that point, we're still waiting to see what the other shoe is going to look like when it hits the table. There have been some discussions about the rate. The intention is to keep the rate at least the same as what it was under the former program. There has been some discussion, very technical, to use Medicare numbers or Medicaid numbers, and that's finally been resolved. So at this point, we need to get back together and start haggling with the state to see how the calculations are going to work. And part of the problem that the county homes have right now is that we're operating in a vacuum. It's like driving through a milk bottle. You're looking for information and you can't get it. So we end up, the county nursing home association, for example, retains a lobbyist, and that lobbyist has been very effective in staying in touch with representatives at HFS trying to find out what's going on. And finally, it looks like it's moving. And if we can get our rate to be at or close to where we were under the original intergovernmental transfer program, we should be okay. So that's the short version. So if I can take it in a different direction if you want.
I have one follow-up question. It's not clear to me then who is the entity responsible for making this move forward.
It's both the state Health Care and Family Services Division and the federal government, the Centers for Medicaid and Medicaid Services.
Okay, not one over the other has a lead in doing this.
Oh, yeah, everything depends on the feds.
Okay.
I mean, so, okay.
Ms. McGinty?
I think it would be impossible to overstate how grateful we should be for this turnaround. You know, Mike, you and your staff, Andrew.
It's been a team effort.
The board, the staff, I think we clearly recognize that, because those of us who have been on the board for a little while remember when we spent 80% of our time talking about the nursing home and the issues and the challenges and the problems and talking about closing it and selling it and things like that, things that we didn't want to do as a county. So thank you all very much. I have two questions. Non-labor expenses, 2011 agency expense. What else do you think can be done on top of what's been done to drop that rate right now to make that work? And then I have a follow-up on that.
Okay. The immediate issue before us was to improve the productivity in the facility, because it was down in the my recollection is that it was in the low to mid 70%, and if you're looking at private facilities, they're in the low 90s. There's a big difference in productivity, so we really started to attack that. And it's not that we want it to be a private facility, we don't, but we said there's a difference in productivity here that needs to be recognized. That was one thing. I'm not sure that we're going to be able to do a whole lot more than what we can do better
with productivity, because that was my follow-up. That combination of agency and productivity, where the numbers have certainly improved.
Yeah. But right now, I think what you're running up against is to your credit, you've got a cadre of people that are long-term employees, and they've got benefits. They've got time off.
and you do have the holiday issue and the vacation time issue, and that does get you into a fix where you do rely on agencies.
One last thing, that any problem with recruiting, because I know that we had nurse shortages before, has that changed over the last couple of years?
I would say in terms of RNs, no. We could still do better in recruiting the RNs, and that is still a weakness. And our goal in all this is pretty straightforward. We want you to be proud of your nursing home. There's no reason that you can't be proud of your nursing home. There is no reason that this facility can't compete with the best of them in the area, and that's what we're going to do.
And thank you.
All right.
Ms. Michaels.
With your projection of profitability, do you have line item or any kind of a timeline stating when you think you might start making repayment back to the loan to the county? And then also, how far are the bills backed up now?
Well, unless I miss, I hate to disappoint you. But,
well, I hope you make it better.
But unless I miss my guess, we made a payment on the $4 million this year, principal and interest. We're operating off a debt service schedule to pay that back. So that has begun. And,
okay. And it's anticipated to continue?
Yes.
At the same level for this coming year?
That's the anticipation. And that's the, I know the world is full of good intentions, and I'm one of them. But yes, that is the idea, that we continue to pay that debt down. Payables are down to 60 days. And I would point out, this was a discussion that we were having last night. I may get the range on this wrong, but when we first started, payables were running routinely 150, 180 days. We've come a long way in that respect.
Ms. Brookson?
What has been over the last 3 years the increase in management costs, and what has been the increase in pay rate for the staff?
There's been the pay rates for the staff, I believe, in the first year. I'm going to take the fifth on that and ask Andrew, because I think it was like a percent and a half in the first year. There's been no change in that for this year. Our fees have stayed the same. It was a modest CPI increase, and it wasn't even a couple of, I don't even think it was $1,000. So basically, we were flat on our fees as well. But I think the last staffing increase was in the area of 1 or 1.5%.
Ms. Holderfield.
I have two questions. I believe you said that you were going to try and build up the dementia unit. Was that correct? You said you'd like to have more.
Well, yes. I think there's a continued need for that. We can't do anything right now. But go ahead.
Okay. With that being said, as far as the RN recruitment, because if you're going to increase your dementia unit, you'll definitely need to increase your RN, CNA, and LPN. So do you have a plan in place then to start the process of recruiting nurses and incentive program?
Not right now. I think what the idea would be, the plan would be, right now you're at 243 beds, and not all of them are staffed, nor are they occupied. So the question is, can we, if we were to do this, there's two ways to do this. One would be to expand so we could use those, expand internally, if you will, do some renovations so we could take advantage of that empty space. The second alternative would be to renovate the existing 205, 210 beds, if you will, so we could use the existing staff. So obviously, if we go higher, yes, you're right, we're going to have to add staff. And no, we have not gotten to that point yet. And,
so then, just to follow up, so in order to increase the dementia unit, there will have to be some restructuring, basically, to the nursing home?
Yes, the requirements for a locked unit are tricky, and it's going to require architectural input at this point. So we're not ready. We can see that it's something that that you will need to do soon, but we're not ready yet.
Thank you.
Mr. Judge?
The problems we've had in the past with the regulatory services out of Springfield, and I'm not sure just which agency kept coming and giving us an inspection. Is that cleared up for the most part now, or are we done with that?
It's cleared up for the most part now. No, we're not done with that, because you're never done with IDPH. It's something that's got a lot of emphasis on the training side. We've gotten a lot better in how we do it. I have to say, Andrew is extremely capable in this area. Extremely capable. He knows the IRS regs. IRS, I get them on the line because it's tax season. He knows the IDPH regs cold, and it's been a great advantage to us. But no, Chief, we're not out of the woods with IDPH. Nobody ever is. And,
Mr. Middle?
Yeah. One of the things I think a lot of the nursing home board is most proud of is the personality testing that we asked and you guys implemented for new employees to try and identify, you know, people who care, would like to care for elderly people. And I wonder if you'd comment on some of the results we heard about last night or some thoughts that whether it's working or not.
Okay. I'm getting the evil eye, so I get to answer that. So, anyway.
You sure you don't want to go?
Well, I don't think we've got enough time, Alan. I mean, it's something we just started. I think we did a lot of research on other, I think Cunningham Children's Home uses this. We did more research on it. I think there are those of us, there's some real believers and those of us that are waiting to see, but it seemed like there was some science behind it. Because what we're looking for is people that will fit. I mean, many people take a job and they get in and they realize that wasn't where they should be, that working in a nursing home really wasn't where they should be. And I think this does something to, in a way, it's beneficial to the employee as well as to the nursing home to hopefully use a little science of personality to get a better fit. So I think we're going to see, but so far it seems like things are going well.
Answer.
But again, I was fairly dubious to begin with, quite honestly. My training is in psychology, but I think it's worth trying, and I think it's working. And I have such respect for Cunningham Children's Home. And Cunningham Children's Home believes in it. And if they believe in it, that gave me something to believe in, quite honestly, because they're an unbelievably good organization.
Ms. Evans.
I would like to ask, I've never heard of that, and what is being used specifically on personality testing and how subjective or objective it is. I would really like more information on that issue.
Okay.
And so if you can send to me what you have and what you're using,
sure.
I'd like to see it.
Sure. Sure.
Ms. Petrie.
Not tonight, but sometime if you could provide for the board the data on staffing and turnover of staffing that you are having to work with and those issues. You did allude to the fact that you still need to bring in agency staff, and I know when all this started, that was a major issue, so I'm interested in learning a bit more about that situation.
So what kind of information can we get for you?
What is the turnover in your staffing?
Okay.
And all the different levels of staffing at the nursing home.
And you have to know the reasons, because certainly some of the people who leave, they leave because
right.
they want to.
No, I understand. I understand.
Some leave willingly, and of course right. then we need to figure out why that's happening, especially if it's a good employee. And
but what I'm interested in is as you're working towards stability, is that curve on staffing stability sort of running along the other curves of stability that you're presenting to us?
Right.
Thank you.
No, we can't. We
yeah.
can't get names.
Well, no, we
can say that's number three. Yeah, no, we can't.
No, no, we know. We know. We know. Yeah.
I asked
for
neighbor. Right.
Other questions? Mr. Do you have a question, Mr. Rosales? Okay. You faked me out there. Seeing there are no questions, I guess we can let you go. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Move the report be received and placed on file.
Second. Motion by Mr. Beck to accept and place the report on file. Second by Mr. Rosales. Discussion. Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
We now move on to Justice and Social Services. Mr. Richards.
Okay, tonight we are going to have our first in a series of regular agency reports, and we are going to start with the Access Initiative because it's new to all of us, and we're going to try to keep everybody updated with what's going on, and everything that's going on with the Access Initiative is new to us, so if we can have Chrissy Parsons or Peter or anybody else who's going to be helping out, come on up.
Call up here.
Yeah, I guess we're not doing the PowerPoint.
No, we're just going to
okay.
Do it off the paper. Good evening, everybody. I'm Peter Tracy, Champaign County Mental Health Board and Developmental Disability Board. We have two boards. I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy for the opportunity for us to reconnect with the county board and the justice as well as the whole board. I want to introduce a couple of people that are here. Dr. Deborah Townsend, who is our board president, and Dr. Dolores Henry, I'm sorry, our vice president, is here tonight, as well as some of the Access staff. This project is a federal grant that comes through the state of Illinois, and from DHS it comes to us. I want to introduce Mr. Tracy Parsons, who is the project director of the Access Initiative, and as you will see, we have gotten a lot of work accomplished, and he's going to tell you about that.
Well, thanks, Peter. Let me also express my appreciation for allowing us a few moments on your very busy agenda that I had a chance to see there. I also would like to do a few introductions and talk about the team that is traveling with us tonight. We do that regularly wherever we are and present and share the information. We travel as a team. And so a couple of our agency partners are here. Patricia Avery is here from Champaign-Urbana Area Project. Trish, just give them a wave. I know they all know you. And from the Muhammad Area Youth Club, Director Mary Rose, Mary Dieter, Rose Moreno, and then a member of her board, Mr. Thornsland. And, of course, State's Attorney Julia Reitz is here, not necessarily with us, but since she's such an important part of our project, we want to make sure she gets acknowledged as a partner as well. Yes. And then Melissa Neely is here, one of our very involved parents, and we're going to talk a little bit about the importance of parents. And we also see a number of youth over there, and critical to our work, and on behalf of this work is our youth. And so Devontae and Jasmine and Kiosha are here with us. And so I just wanted to make sure we acknowledge them and let you know that we travel as a group. I'm excited to come and talk with you tonight. I'm also really excited about this work. In my 20-plus years of working on behalf of low-income African-American poverty communities, disenfranchised communities, adding the mental health work to my work is very exciting, but also really critical when you think about serving this population of folks. So I'm not going to go through in detail each one of the slides that you have, but wanted to offer it as a baseline of information for you to have, and we'll be glad to come back and keep you updated as well. I have a wonderful staff, as your presenter before you talked about the work that the staff has done in improving things at the nursing home. I'm very fortunate to have an outstanding team with me, as well as, you know, and this is a pretty mandated, regulated cooperative agreement. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what that means as well, but we have mandated staff. that is required as part of this. And so we had a chance to meet Peter, who serves not only as the Mental Health Board Director, but he's also what's known in this project as one of our principal investigators. We also have a state liaison who's also known as a principal investigator, Dr. Tanya Anderson. Not with us tonight is Adrian Spires, who heads up our parent engagement activities and leading our family work. Sean Lampkins is here. He's our youth engagement specialist. Not also here is Julia Thomas from our quality area. Cultural and linguistic competency, Shonda Somerville is here. Technical assistance, Karen Sims is here. And Jonte Rollins is here, who handles our social marketing. Also critical to our work and with us every step of the way, documenting and helping shape the work that we're doing with our evaluation team from the University of Illinois, Dr. Nicole Allen, Dr. Mark Eber, and Dr. Nugay Dezen. They are not here with us. I'm not going to go through all these statistics, but they are important when it comes to the work and why and the hows and why we were even funded to put together this cooperative agreement. But mental health challenges are something that really are important and critical to the work of serving youth, and specifically African-American youth. As I shared with them, we're just really excited about this work that we're doing in this area. But 1 in 5 children have mental health challenges. We know that youth with mental health problems may lead to poor school performance, dropping out, strained family relations. And you see child welfare, juvenile justice, substance abuse, engaging in risky behavior. All of these are symptoms that all kids face, but kids with mental health issues have much more significant challenges with that issue. Up to 92% of adolescents with serious mental health disorders receive mental health services, and 2 or more of them involved in multiple systems. The systems that we're really looking at and involved with are child welfare, education system, juvenile justice system, substance abuse, and of course, mental health. Our community was an awarded community. Our disparities and disproportionate rates that African American youth are engaged in those systems that I just shared with you are alarming at best, and really is at a crisis standpoint in our community, and it's something we must look at and address that way. 74% of Champaign County Illinois Department of Justice commitments were African American youth. 82% of Champaign County Juvenile Detention Center admissions were African American. 67% of youth suspended once or more in just the Champaign and Urbana schools are African American. 81% of the youth suspended more than once are African American. We talk a lot about our charge here, which is to build a system of care. It's a new way to address these issues. It's a grassroots approach. We're not a new community working to implement a system of care. There are over 170 across the country. It's a tried and tested and evaluated way of working. And so we have a wonderful model to follow on how to do this work. And these grants are given to communities who've demonstrated a readiness for transformation and significant change. And so we're operating from that place that our community is ready for this significant change that's really gonna happen. There are some guiding principles around system of care work. It's family-driven and youth-guided. And that's been met with interesting support as we move forward in doing this work. Often, those of us that do social service work and work with families work without their involvement and their participation and their engagement and their input. This work requires that we have youth and families at the table in all facets of our work. It's community-based work, culturally and linguistically competent. And we look at wraparound management services to support the needs of the social emotional needs of youth and families. Again, I'm not going to go through all of this. You have some of those guiding principles there in front of you. We look at this in an array of services and supports for youth and families. So there is a document there where you see youth and families in the center, and all the supports that they need are circled around in mental health, family supports, community supports, spiritual supports, positive peer and mentoring, recreational supports, juvenile justice, health services. So all of those things are important components of building a system of care. While we have 12 overall goals that we're looking to implement, you know, we have six summarized strategic goals. So we want to build our sustainable infrastructure. You know, this grant is for just 6 years, and then we go away. So hopefully we build up a system that's able to sustain itself, that's informed and involved. Youth and families throughout the leadership of developing our system of care, expanding capacity, interagency and cross-system collaboration, community development, of course I mentioned, evaluation. So how will this transformation take place? Slowly and incrementally. We're moving at a internally very rapid pace. Probably externally people are saying, what are you doing, when are things going to start, when are services going to get going? And of course, as we travel around and do these presentations and talk to different groups, and our phones are ringing every day with people that have youth that are saying, hey, I've got a youth, we've got a group of youth that need help and support and engagement, when are you guys going to start bringing them in? So incrementally we're getting going and getting our process up off the ground. Funding assistance supports, funding to support building of systems of care talks about building this capacity and this whole infrastructure. So our whole first year, that's what we did, was work to build the infrastructure, building our partnerships, establishing our team, getting ourselves prepared, starting to build relationships. I know in this community that we've talked a lot about collaboration and building supports and building networks to ensure that people are working around, but we talk a lot about authentic collaboration. So we don't want to talk about collaboration that serves a particular purpose. We want to talk about really cross-systems supports. You know, we had a great meeting yesterday just talking about a database and how agencies can access this database and use it for each system. And so when you think about that, doing that work, it's really exciting, but also very challenging as well. People shared with you that our cooperative agreement is between the state, the federal government, and then locally our money comes in through the mental health port. So we're a $9 million project, cooperative agreement for 6 years. There's also a significant match requirement that I'll talk about here shortly. So what we're funded to do is build a sustainable infrastructure and build and expand services and supports as part of our delivery system. SAMHSA requires that the youth that receive our money and participate our money to support them, they must be have a special diagnosis, and so I've given you the technical term that they must meet here. And so you'll hear a lot about that, and I want you guys to have this information and know that we have specific requirements on the youth that we can serve and who the money can touch, because you're going to hear, well, I've got this group of kids over here, we've got a whole population here, and we can't touch them, we can't serve them. What we want to be able to do is build the agencies, the supports, and the resources to build the network around, so those youth that we can't serve, we make sure that other organizations are able to serve them. So we're funded to build an infrastructure, not just fund programs. I'll readily admit our agencies are working to understand that. And so we're going through that process right now to educate all on what and how our funding can be used. So I mentioned briefly the exciting part about the mental health work. I'm also really excited about the trauma and justice component that's part of this work. When you think about families that have long histories of substance abuse, mental health issues, juvenile justice issues, there's some trauma that's been ingrained in them. There's also a high level of trauma in those of us that do this work. And so we have to learn how to talk about this. We have to learn how to talk about, you know, in the black community, far too often there's not a high comfort level to talk about mental health issues and the fact that many of our youth and families have that. We've got to learn how to start having those conversations publicly, and that's a great part of the work that we're going to be doing. Let me just share with you briefly the youth we're going to be targeting in our cooperative agreement are 10 to 18 with social, emotional, and behavioral challenges and their families, and then those in cross systems of the five systems that I mentioned to you. Our work will be broad and engaging, selective as well, but important. But the more important part, I think, of what we're going to be doing is around the intense and specific work that we'll be doing to meet the needs of our youth and families. Our work starts with prevention, early intervention, crisis and respite. So one of the exciting parts that I know we have a gap in services here in our community is this whole notion of respite. So if the youth is acting out or having challenges at home or a family's having difficulty, where can everyone go to just cool out, take a moment to cool off? Well, right now, probably what's happened is a police recall. And there aren't very many options that are not as punitive as that. And so that's an important part of the work that we're going to be doing as well. So intervention and treatment, and then making sure, again, we have a significant maintenance plan. We're going to start small. The youth in our first sampling are going to be from Urbana schools and Champaign schools. We're working closely with them for identification. And then we're going to have a sampling of youth that are involved in the youth detention center. Let me just quickly go through the money part. So you see the show me the money slide. We're a $9 million project, as I shared with the cooperative agreement. The first year, we received $1 million. We're now in year two, which is 1.5. Year three will be $2 million. $2 million in year four. And year five is $1.5 million. And then we go down to $1 million in year six. The flip of that is the match. So we have to have significant match each year for this cooperative agreement. Right now, the Mental Health Board, with the funding of the programs and services that it does, covers our match completely. As we go through the process, we're going to have to be building up our network of match. So that can be cash and in kind, and services and supports of our partners are part of the match. And so it changes incrementally as we receive more money, probably less money, we're required to have double the match. And so it transfers as we go through our system. Our funds, and again, I want you to have this information as information as you for information as you travel through the community. But our funds are for administrative costs, evaluation, the state's share, social marketing, training, service coordination, and treatment services. The Mental Health Board funds that we have as part of this are for PLL, which is our evidence-based program that you've heard about in the past, doing great work. Prevention and intervention programs, youth and family leadership, youth development, services and supports. We have a pretty descriptive, again, way that the funds can be used. So we have an example in here for year three. And that's the other part that's really interesting that's been a challenge for us in working through the county system. We're actually functioning through three different budget cycles. So we function through the state's fiscal year, which is July to June. The county board's budget system is November to October. Oh, no, that's the state's. That's the feds. And then the county's is December through November. So trying to match and balance those three budgets to meet expectation and requirements has been challenging, but we are doing a good job of navigating that. And so I have some of the costs here that talks to you how the funds are broken down and how they are used. And so in the spirit of time, I'll stop there and take any questions that you may have for me. Yes, sir.
I guess I'm curious on outcomes. What kind of measures or what's the what do you have built into the grant that'll give some at the, you know, at the end or whatever intervals will give some measure to where you're at, you know, in terms of outcomes?
It's ongoing, and so we do have federal mandated outcomes that we're expected to meet, but locally we are looking to I think that's one of your slides in there. But we're looking to reduce the numbers of youth involved in our systems. And then, so those will be our measure outcomes to look at percentages, percentage differences. And so we have the, again, we do have measure outcomes that we will have and are expected to meet, not only federally, but then again, local outcomes.
There's actually two evaluations, a local evaluation and a national evaluation that we're required to participate in. And, you know, when Tracy mentioned that the first year, for example, we got $1 million, well, the reality is that $200,000 of that went for the evaluation piece. And so there's a contract between the state and the University of Illinois to do the evaluation. And SAMHSA has a very strong commitment to evaluating the program all the way through, both in the national and the local.
So is year 4, 5, and 6 contingent upon any outcomes of year 1, 2, and 3?
Well, every year we are measured off our outcomes and goals and expectations. And so we've just completed a year 1 evaluation requirements. We're in the middle of year 2, and we've already submitted our documentation to talk about our goals for year 3. So it's annual review, Mr. Knott.
Any other questions, Mr. Quisenberry?
Yes, you mentioned students from Champaign-Urbana and from the youth detention program. Do you know roughly how many students that's going to be in that first sample size?
We're looking at about 50 families, youth and families, in this first sample, our first year. And then there's levels to our engagement. So as I mentioned, there's the broad services, and so we're looking to serve roughly about 300 in that broad area. But we directly want to impact about 150 families directly that we'll be working with. That's year 1.
Thank you.
Ms. Evans?
I wanted two things, actually. If we could get the, well, me specifically, I shouldn't speak for all the other board members, but the federal requirements, the OMB circular that regulates how the money can be used for this grant, if you can just simply send that to me, I'd like to have that. And the other thing is, how much of the Access Initiative resources are used to look at system problems where you gave us the first slide? The first slide talks about the 74%, the 82%. How much of this money, let me say it like this, many of the programs that are being utilized under Access Initiative were already present in the community and serving in some way this population under other initiatives.
Sure.
How much of the resources are really being utilized to look at some of the system failures that produce the outrageous numbers that you have on your first slide?
Well, I think that's the interesting and exciting part of this work, is that we are getting a chance to look at and evaluate our current service array. That's what we call it. So let's look at what we have. Let's look at what's working effectively and where do we need to make changes. We also, I'm excited about the work that we're doing, is learning what we have. So how many organizations might be doing duplications of service? Where do we have gaps? I mentioned the fact that we didn't have any respite service right now. And so we're doing a full assessment of what services and programs and evaluations that we have. I shared with you also that we're going through the challenging process of alignment and realignment. And so, again, this work is pretty prescriptive about what you can fund, who you can fund, and what types of services. And so we are going through that process now with our existing agencies that are long-term partners of the Mental Health Board, looking at infrastructure building, youth and family leadership, intervention and treatment services, universal prevention specialists. So all that kind of stuff is in here for you to look at, and we're going through that process right now. Sure.
To 3-year budget, and I know this is a very small scope of that. What percentage really is actually going into direct service? It looks very top heavy to me, meaning a lot of money is being expended on salaries and travel and administrative costs. How much of that is actually the service population that you intend to reach?
Well, if you look at the model that we have about the federal money, about 50% of the money is for services and treatment. 30% is for services and treatment. The other 20% of that half of the money is for infrastructure building. And so, again, we are functioning from what's required. So that if you look at the administrative team, you know, we're required positions for this initiative set by SAMHSA. And so we're operating, I think, from a pretty lean place. 25% of this is administrative costs for the team to do this work and organize. And I didn't get into the numbers of meetings and, you know, again, the fact that we're youth and family focused and driven. A lot of our meetings are at night, so most of us work, you know, 12, 14, 15 hours a day operating this initiative. So
are the meetings open to the public, and could they be attend of those interested organizations that are not being specifically targeted?
Well, yes, the answer to your question. This is about collaboration building. This is about partnerships. And again, we have very broad representation in our community as we're doing this work. Most meetings have 15 to 20 persons involved, and they go as high as 60 to 70 in attendance, and there's meetings almost every day. So we do have a calendar of our meetings. I'm hoping that our website's going to be up and operational within the next month, so you can go in and attend as many meetings as you want and like to attend.
So you'll be posting minutes to past meetings as well?
Or? All the minutes. Again, this is a pretty open process, so all the minutes of every meeting that we have are available. We're cutting a lot of trees and using a lot of resources to communicate and document everything that we do all the way along the process. And so every meeting that we have, we've got a great meetings template to simplify what the meeting structures looks like, so you can go and find out who's there, what was talked about, what follow-up things are going to be happening. All that's pretty open and very, very accessible.
When are the programs supposed to be starting, or those initiatives, or those pilot programs that are being created or being put in place?
Well, the interesting part of doing this work right now is as we start off what we call our service delivery part of working directly with youth and families. But we've got ongoing services with our partner agencies that are taking place. I've mentioned the PLL program that's been in place a little more than a year. It's been very well received through our judges and state's attorneys, and many of the families have been very well supportive of the program that they've gone through. Our alignment of our new services, though, you know, that's what I'm talking about, that we're moving towards. I think we'll start, you know, bringing our first youth in within the next 30 days, and by July, I think you'll see a pretty engaged initiative.
I also saw the very wonderful ad you had in Sunday's paper. I thought it was very informative to those of us that had not seen any advertisement as of yet. I thought it was very straight to the point. But how would you monitor or audit some of the services for success? I mean, you've been operating now a year and a half.
How would I monitor
the success of what you're doing regarding the initiatives?
Well, again, our first year, and let me add, you know, even though we talk about it as a year, I've only been on board since June. Well, I've been on board since May. Our full team has been on board since June, so we haven't even met a full year. So the grant was awarded to us in October of 2009. We didn't receive any actual cash until almost March of 2010. And so we were brought on as a team, again, in June. And I think we've done a tremendous amount of work. And so the success will be down the road. The success will be proved when we have the family that says to us, before the system of care was put in place, I didn't know what to do with my child. He or she now are functioning so much better. We're getting supports for their mental health issues. They're more engaged in schools. They're not being called and sent to the juvenile detention center. They're not engaged in, you know, substance abuse as they once were. Now they're much more productive youth. And so that's when we'll start having the successes, right? right now we're doing infrastructure building and getting ready to, and building the partnerships and ensuring that we have the authentic collaboration that we talk about, and not just have that be financially driven for people to partner together, but understanding the supports and the services are what really drive the authentic collaboration. So
your meetings are being held in this building during the day? Or
we have meetings all over this community. So we have had just a few meetings here. We've had them in churches. We've had them in community organizations. We've had them in our partner organizations. Again, I can't even begin to tell you the number of meetings that we've had throughout our community and the number of different locations that we've had them in. It's been everywhere in all segments of the community. Mayor Vita is here from Muhammad. You know, we've been really interested in making sure we're engaged in that population, that area of the community, working with those youth. Rantoul, so we've hosted meetings up in Rantoul to ensure we're getting all around our county and touching all segments of it.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Petrie.
I'd like to loop the conversations you had with Ms. Ammons and Mr. Rosales and go back to trying to focus on exactly what all of this money and this grant will do to promote good intervention. I look at this 81% of youth suspended more than once in the Champaign-Urbana schools, and we have all of these agencies in the community that supposedly offered some services to youth, but we're not making a dent in these statistics. So I need a little bit more elaboration where this grant is going to start making a dent in this. If the evaluators, I mean, I know Mark Abel, Aber, and so are these yearly evaluations, formative evaluations, so that you have corrections along the pathway during the 6 years of the grant to start correcting things if things aren't working, and then I'm assuming at the end of the 6 years, one large summative evaluation. So if you'd comment on those aspects.
Well, you've asked a lot in that question. And so when we talk about really evaluating these systems independently, and that's probably how they've operated most effectively, or how they've operated, period, is independently. There's been some collaboration. There's been some work across systems. There's been some successful programs. But when you're talking about building a system of care, it's about putting all of that together. So what works and what's been done well, let's learn about that. Let's, you know, we talk a lot about evidence-based work, evidence-informed evidence, you know, what's been measured, what's been evaluated, what's been tested to see. I mean, I ran an agency for 15 years. I would have told you everything that we did was great in the forefront of what needed to take place, but what we've learned about the system of care is it has to be evaluated, it has to be tested, it has to be measured, and so what I would say in the past, why we have such significant high numbers, is that these entities have worked too much in isolation. And so I'll simplify it by saying it that way. This is Tracy's opinion as the director, but, you know, honestly, how many of these systems are... we have to talk about openness to change, openness to evaluating what we're doing well and what we're not doing well, and being honest about that. And so I think a system of care promotes that whole concept and idea right there. So we have to, you know, Geraldo held up the ad to start talking about what we're doing and explaining who we are. There's going to be some tough discussions that have to take place and some honest discussions that have to take place that haven't started as part of this work as well. But I think the incentive to improve the life for youth and families is what we're going to work from and make our county one of those places that youth are thriving, restored, and healthy versus ones that we're channeling toward so many of the negative things that we talked about. Ms. Brooks.
How young are the youngest people you work with, and is that young enough?
Well, we're looking at 10 to 18, and so the answer to your question is no. It's not young enough. But, you know, there's a lot of work taking place from the zero for the 0 to 6 population. We'll be looking to see how we connect with them. And so, again, building the systems of care is about looking at, you know, 0 to, I had a person stop me in the hall today that said 18 is great, but she knows a couple of folks in their high 20s and early 30s that have mental health issues that are really challenged and struggling in our community, and how can we connect with them? So again, building an effective system of care will enable us to bring in the partnerships and organizations that are serving populations younger and older.
Ms. Ambitz, you had a follow-up question?
To go just quickly to his match requirements, and I'm a little familiar with that. I know the mental health is covering right now the match. As it goes on, is that the continued plan for covering the match requirement for the SAMHSA?
Well, it won't be enough to just count on, and that again is not an effective way of building our system of care to be totally dependent on. I mean, we're fortunate that we have the mental health board in our community. We're fortunate that Peter Tracy had the vision many years ago to start the work to look towards getting this cooperative agreement brought in. But we have to talk about and build, and we have great partnership. We have great work taking place already. So, again, the agencies and organizations that are involved are already providing significant match. We're just fortunate at this point. We don't have to use it. So I think when we get to the point where we have to start capturing all of the work of our partners, we're going to have more than enough match.
Just the final, are the performance measures that the evaluators are using, are those federal performance measures under this, or are they local performance measures?
I think it'll be a combination of both. We've got a very active evaluation committee that's looking at all of the performance measurements that not only are required through the federal requirement, but also locally looking at, again, where we are and what we need to make sure we implement.
The local evaluation design is approved by the feds, and then the national is more prescribed.
Are there any other questions? Mr. Nudo. Mr. Kurtz.
Thank you. Tracy, are you going to be working in conjunction when you talk about older mental health situations with George Ford and State's Attorney Ms. Reitz on the mental health court at all?
Well, I would assume so. You know, I've been a part of some of the preliminary meetings, but
right now the
mental health court is for adult offenders. This is for folks.
You mentioned in the 20s and 30s, so I wasn't sure if
That's outside of our scope. But I think the fact that there will be a mental health court also helps heighten the importance and the knowledge around youth mental health issues. And so I guess when you ask will we be engaged, I would assume on some level, maybe not directly with referring the population, but the fact that we're talking about building a continuum of care.
Okay, Mr. Dito.
Tracy, you're subject to the Open Meetings Act, correct?
I've been told that we are.
Okay. So, I mean, you said you didn't have your website up yet, and so meetings and minutes and those kinds of things would be critical that you would have that as a link to the mental health website, or what's your intention on this?
Well,
I was just going to say, first off, we are using a Google Access website now. Everything is posted on Google. It's called Google All, right? So virtually every document, most of the documents are posted there, and people have access to them. Now what we're trying to do is move toward creating a website so that it is more user-friendly. I got to tell you, I personally have a hard time with that Google, with the Google process, and other people don't have any problem with it.
Why wouldn't you have a link from Mel Health? I mean, you guys are the...
It's a good idea.
you know, rather than have another website, you've got mental health is the, you are in charge of the operation, correct, Peter?
You're the only yes, I suppose.
You're the oversight person.
Yes, but what I would say about that is that you got to remember, as Tracy mentioned, we did not have the staff on board until June, and we started this project when the grant was announced, so we did some things that didn't cost us much, and using the Google option was a cheap option at that point.
Any other questions? Mr. Knott.
Just curious, from a management oversight perspective, how much do you have to deal with the program officers in D.C.? Or, I mean, is there a lot of interaction with them? Do they have a lot of oversight of some of our federal grants? Where I work, we have a lot of interaction. Is part of it you have to go out there? How does that work?
We do have a number of levels of communication on a federal level. We'd have two liaisons. One is a financial liaison, and then we have a direct communication liaison on a federal level. I've been talking with her pretty regularly since we've been involved, and there's a tremendous amount of training support through this project, and we have to Training and Technical Assistance Partnership is what it's called, and so we have monthly conference calls with them. Each one of the team members has a liaison through the federal training entity, and so there's a lot of oversight engagement. We have there's five national trainings, and we're required to go to two of them each year, so there's a great deal of involvement and engagement. Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Elderfield.
You said you've had several meetings every day, so are you meeting then with other organizations? From what I'm understanding, you're meeting with other organizations that already have these systems in place. Can you tell us some of the names of the organizations that you've already met with?
Well, the Mental Health Board has, 14? How many funded agencies are there, Peter? About 20. So I would include all of those organizations funded through the Mental Health Board. Each one of the systems areas that we talked about, so juvenile justice, education, child welfare, mental health, we're meeting with all of the organizations in those areas that provide those services already. Churches, community groups.
Can you be specific on what community groups you've already met with?
I don't know. If you look for someone specific, I don't.
You said you'd had meetings, with all of these different organizations, so I was just hoping that you could name some of your organizations.
Lutheran Social Services, Mental Health Community Elements, Champaign-Urbana Area Project, Boys and Girls Club, Canaan Church,
And then will each of those people, are you looking to have a liaison with each and every one of those community organizations to be a point person if they're coming across mental health issues so that they can then make a suggestion that these are some kids that are needing some help, some families that are needing help? Because I don't understand how this is all going to come together and work as a system, because if you don't have point people, liaisons, giving referrals, I was just curious how that will function.
Yeah, many of the organizations that you're asking about have identified key staff that's intricately involved in all levels. Believe me, the organizations are saying to me, Tracy, you're having too many meetings. I don't work for access to attend all the stuff you're asking us to do. But if you think about, five or six areas, each area is having anywhere from one to two meetings per week, not to mention we have a coordinating council, which is kind of like our governing body. We have a community-wide meeting monthly that's open to anyone who wants to come, where we have many of the agency partners. But our key systems organizations We do have liaisons and representation from those areas, and so those organizations are intricately involved, and there are very few, if any, organizations that are key to this that we haven't touched base with, that on some levels they're not involved.
Mr. Rosales.
Final question. For our viewing audience, what is the URL for the Google Access website that you have? Can you repeat that, at least so that we could have that on tape?
Hello, good evening, everyone.
Ms. Brown, could you drop the microphone, please?
Our Google site is by invitation, and so therefore you would need to send us an email, and we would include you into membership on that site, and then you will have access to that stuff.
Okay. Well, I don't really have. As I said, we're in the process of putting up a website. I am not entirely sure that everything that we do is subject to open meetings. I think we're treating it like that. That's my policy, and we're moving in that direction. I don't think that we're violating open meetings at this point.
I was just indicating for information, those that wanted to get a little bit more information, that was in Sunday's paper, that we could, you know, sort of peruse through the site and see what's going on. What participating organizations and you know, updates of meetings and updates on information. I think that we all need to know what's going on and make it a lot more visible for the public to be more engaging. There's a lot of questions in the community,
yeah,
as to how are we spending $9 million in a period of 3 years into this community when there are families that are basically in need, and how many families are beginning to work with? Does that pool of families actually increase? Does it maintain to be the same 50 or 100 or 200 families that are only going to be dealt with during this period of time? If I was a family that had issues with daughters and sons, could I be able to do a referral? Does that referral go into the high school or through the juvenile needs detention program? There's a lot of questions that I know that a lot of people have asked me, and I can't give them those answers.
Are there any other questions? Ms. Petrie.
I would strongly urge you all to check out how much of this information needs to get into the public domain. These are federal dollars, and it seems a little concerning that all of it isn't there and ready access for our community.
Okay. Are there any more questions? Okay. Thanks, guys.
I move the report be received and placed in file.
Is there a second for that? Second by Edmonds. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. The second thing on the agenda is we have monthly reports. We have monthly reports from our agencies. Do we have a motion to put that on file?
So moved.
James and Holderfield. Now that we have a motion, are there any comments? I have these in front of me if anybody would like to look at them, and I'll summarize them in a minute here. Any questions on the reports? Okay. Animal control, registered 331 cats, 686 dogs, 4,017 tags. In their December report, it says monthly report, presumably this was just for the month of December. Brought in $15,094 in revenue from registrations, fees, and kennel services. Paid out to municipalities $4,213.87. And payments to municipalities, primarily the city of Champaign, were $1,432. $60 dogs and 51 cats were impounded. 23 dogs were returned to their owner, and 53 animals were euthanized in December, and the animal control spayed and neutered 8 dogs in December. Our emergency management agency, Bill Keller's here. I don't know if he has anything he wants to add to the report. Doesn't look like it. It's a fairly slow month as far as problems with emergency management. The EMA is working with the University of Illinois and other area public safety departments on a tabletop exercise. And the EMA team is also meeting to train on the use of the newly remodeled Champaign County Emergency Operations Center. Head Start settled a grievance filed in 2009 regarding furlough days and the staff. They did a workshop entitled Working with Challenging Families, and they've started discussion with the U of I Child Development Laboratory Child Care Center regarding collaboration. In addition to that, they don't have their report from the Federal Review last October, and some of the things they did were they report all vacancies for Champaign are filled, and Smile Healthy conducted dental lessons with Head Start last month. Head Start has a 99% enrollment right now, and currently their head count, early Head Start in December had 117 for total enrollment, and Head Start Child Development had 421. Our juvenile detention center in January 1st through the 31st had a census ranging from 17 to 24, and the public defender, 640 cases total were opened and 795 were closed, so they were able to eat into their backlog a little bit. Well, this was for this. We've got a report for October from them. If there are any questions on the reports? All in favor of placing it on file, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. Is there any other business? Mr. Rosales?
If we wanted to add item agendas on to social justices, what is the best way to go about that? I'm saying that more so for other board members that were interested, that feel that we're not getting the true wealth of what the committee of the whole does versus the specific committee that used to meet in the past.
Well, for action items for justice and social services, just as the same with the other committees, I would recommend people email me and or Deb up to the Tuesday before for action items, and the policy generally with the county board has been anything somebody wants on the agenda will be put on the agenda.
So it would have to be like the Monday or Tuesday prior to the dissemination of the agenda. The agenda gets disseminated on Friday, so I would imagine by Monday, Tuesday, the latest?
Yeah, so for this month, this is Tuesday, we were finalizing the agenda a week ago Tuesday, so basically a week before the agenda is getting finalized. And it's
okay.
Basically the deadline, except for an addendum for
okay.
getting something on.
Good, that's fair. Thank you.
So there any other business? Chair's report, the jury selection committee did meet last month. I was unable to attend. Ms. Ammons, do you have anything to they have, one of the things they've been working on, their legislative committee is working with Representative Jacobson's office on, she introduced some legislation concerning jury selection. So they're looking at other means than just public attention to try to fix some of those problems. Okay, we have no action items for the full board meeting for this month. So that is it for Justice and Social Services.
Next up is Policy Personnel and Appointments to Ms. Evans.
Good evening. Policy Personnel Appointments, we have a few appointments that we'll do. Number one, Lincoln Legacy Committee, term from 3/1/2011 to February 28th, 2014. Mr. Chair, your selection.
My selection is Ms. K. Grabo. It's
Grabo.
Thank you.
Is there a second to that?
Second.
Any discussion on that? Ms. Petrie.
It's purely an information question. What is the purpose of this committee?
Well, this is the same committee as prior,
right? Reappointment, right.
It's a reappointment
committee. They've been working on
historical Lincoln, work, the Lincoln Memorial.
Exactly.
That's what the committee is. Any other questions about that? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Ms. Cabros. Number two, Champaign County Board Special Committee Strategic Planning Committee. Five county board members to be appointed to that. Mr. Chair.
My instructions are Mr. Betts, Ms. Ammons, Mr. McGinty, Mr. Noodle, Mr. Knight, with Mr. McGinty as the chair.
Is there a second to the... Thank you, Mr. Alex. Are there any discussion or questions about the appointments, Mr. Chair?
This is, in a way, a continuation of this committee from the last term. The last term had only three members. I think it was better to add it from the people. That's why it's five this time. We'll be looking at a variety of subjects, including reviewing revenue sources, looking at succession planning for different departments, how to try to incorporate green initiatives, working with facilities for long-term planning, things like that, capital improvement planning, et cetera, et cetera. There are a lot of long-term planning, but not necessarily restricted to that. So if you have any ideas, please forward them to me or to Mr. McGinty or any member of the committee.
Any other discussion on this reappointment of this committee? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Thank you. Item three is Assistant Deputy Chair Policy. There's been a change to the Policy Committee. Appointment of Quisenberry to replace Mr. Alex. Is there a second?
Well, actually, I have to go back to Mr. Alex has indicated he wishes to step down for his positions, and Mr. Quisenberry has indicated he would be willing to replace him. Therefore, I nominate Mr. Quisenberry as the Assistant Deputy Chair of Policy, Personnel, and Appointments.
Second
by Mr. Betts. So, is any discussion on that? Yes, sir.
I'd just like to ask Mr. Alex to affirm that he is wishes to step down.
That is correct.
Thank you.
And Mr. Quisenberry, do you wish to accept that position?
I do.
Thank you. Any other discussion on this matter? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Number four, Labor Committee, Mr. Rival.
I'm going to appoint Mr. Alex to replace myself. Yes, I am stepping down to the member of the Labor Committee. His assignment would be, I believe, is Head Start, early Head Start in court security.
Okay. Is there a second to that?
Second
by Mr. McGinty. Any discussion on this appointment? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Seeing none. Number five, Champaign County Board Special Committee, Veteran Administrations Committee, Commission Committee. Mr. Weibel.
I should see Veterans Assistance
Commission. Veterans Assistance Committee,
yes. Yes, my selections are Mr. Langheim as chair, Mr. Carter, Mr. Rosales, Mr. James, and Ms. Holdenfield.
Second
by Mr. Betts. Any discussion on that appointment? Mr. Weibel.
One of the committee's forum to work with county veterans in setting up, or working with the Veterans Assistance Commission, which actually for the veterans outside of the board. The commission has the legal right to ask for funding from the county. However, it's the county board who sets the rules. So obviously, in order to do this, you really have to sort of hopefully come to some agreement on how to operate in step. And that's what this committee will try to do. In addition, the county has to provide some office space for that commission. But I think in order to figure out how much office space they need, you have to figure out what the rules are. So everything sort of wound together in some knot, and hopefully it'll be a pleasant knot when it's all done.
Any other discussion on this appointments for this committee? If
I can just make one follow-up, Mr. Weibel, this committee then will set not just the rules of the operation of the VAC, but the I would imagine that we would be getting some kind of budget. I know we talked about this before,
also,
of how much money will
actually, yes.
This will come from this committee.
They will make recommendations to the board.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any other discussion on this item? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Thank you very much. Item B is County Administrator's Report.
The first item, vacant positions listing, is available for your information. The second item is a recommendation for award of contract pursuant to RFP 2011-002 for the fiber optic structured cabling for the 202 Art Bartel construction project, which is on page 18 of your packet. The recommended award is to go to Champaign Telephone Company in the amount of $43,684.17.
Move. Okay. It's been moved by Mr. McGinty and second by Mr. Jay. Thank you. Any discussion on this item? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Ellis.
I'll be abstaining from this vote as the this particular vendor is a client of the firm in which I own a controlling interest.
Any other discussion on this item? I just wanted to ask Ms. Busey, is this award to Champaign Telephone Company based on lowest bidder or based on specs?
Both.
Okay.
But the other bids are there, and you can see that they are definitely
lowest bidder.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other discussion? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Motion carries.
The next item is just a request for your endorsement of the evaluation of the responses to the RFQ for employee health insurance and related benefits broker consultant services. You approved the release of this RFQ at your meeting last month. We received 9 responses to this RFQ today, and the recommendation for the evaluation committee is to include 1 representative from each employee group, so 1 AFSCME, which they designated, 1 FOP, which was designated by FOP, 1 non-bargaining employee, 2 county board members to be named by Chair Weibel, and myself and Debbie Chow.
Are there any questions about this RFP? Ms. Petrie.
Do you have any estimate as to the cost to pay this outside broker consultant? I know Ms. Woodson raised the issue as to why this is necessary and why this couldn't be done in-house. There is no cost to the county because brokers are typically paid by the health insurance providers who end up being contracted, and this is true throughout the industry for health insurance services for comparable counties, for the cities of Champaign and Urbana. And we do not do this in-house. We have not done this in-house for at least 15 years. We don't have the expertise to do this in-house, and so we engage the assistance of a broker for this particular, to search the market for opportunities for the county to purchase the health insurance and related benefits that we offer to our employees.
Point of order, Madam Chair. I believe there's no motion on the floor. I'd like to move approval.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded by, I can't even see, Stan. Mr. Weibel.
I'm not quite sure, but I think I probably should nominate 2 people from the county board at this moment.
Richards.
Sorry, I didn't
know. My selections are 1 Democrat, 1 Republican, and be Ms. Brookson and Mr. Sapp.
Ms. Brookson, would you accept that nomination? Mr. Sapp? Yes, okay. Mr. Chair, I guess I would ask a question on parliamentary procedures since that was not in there. Do we just accept the whole thing at this point?
We've done this in the past. This is just an evaluation process, so basically it's designated by the policy committee, because our hope is that this group will begin working tomorrow morning on these responses. We would like to think we can bring a recommendation back to you at your next meeting, which is March 8th, and it's going to take every bit of that to be able to get that accomplished in that time frame. It's likely that we will actually ask you on March 8th to allow us to bring a recommendation directly to the board meeting on March 17th, because we may still be working on it. But historically, an evaluation committee like this has been just established as part of the process for this RFQ, and the board chair naming the two members and the rest of the membership of the committee, just designated by policy to move forward.
All right. Mr. Allen.
I'll accept the, as a friendly amendment, the identification of the individuals identified by the chair.
All right. All right. So it's been a minute and a second. Any other discussion on this evaluation committee? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The motion carries. And your last item on that?
The last item was created as a result of a request at your last meeting, which was to have documented those action items that are finalized at the committee level rather than being required to move forward to the full county board. So documented starting on page 22 are items that, when they are approved at committee, are completed pursuant to the policies of the county board as set forth in your various ordinances and resolutions. The only thing I would point out is that the first, where it says all committees, anytime a report is received and placed on file by a committee, that's it. It doesn't go to the county board. And any work direction to administrative staff, which can occur at any committee, is generally to have administrative staff go do something and bring it back to you. So it doesn't go to the county board to be approved if directed by the committee.
Any other questions, Mr. Singh?
I asked this question at caucus, but I still see where we're individual committees are outlined in there, and I understand that maybe that was the format before, but since we're a committee of the whole, I always sort of want to think that, you know, we're doing business as a whole committee instead of individual committees, and I keep getting confused on that issue, and I wish we could clean it up so that if we're going to be individual committees, let's be individual committees, but if we're going to be a committee of the whole, let's act as a whole.
For this, these policies, you still have areas of responsibility. And when you're in the committee of the whole, you're still a committee. You aren't taking final action except on these areas, on these items. Anything else that's done at committee is finalized when it is forwarded from the committee of the whole to the county board. All of your ordinances and resolutions have not been updated to reflect committee of the whole, and that's a labor-intensive task that, you know, you could direct us to go ahead and do. I would suggest that be done only if you're absolutely sure that this is going to be a form of government that will be maintained into the long future. Otherwise, you're just going to have to undo it. And I think it's pretty clear we have these areas of responsibility. They match up with the definitions of committee that exist in these policies and ordinances. So, while it's not exact, I think the intent is fairly clear.
And I'll just say that Ms. Vesey and I, and now Mr. Quinceberry, I think we'll bring back to the committee of the whole really the discussion that got us into the committee of the whole structure in the first place, and how we could possibly do some tweaking here. So prior to doing such a labor-intensive project like changing all of that, we would bring something back to this committee first with some recommendations on possible changes that we can do, and then possibly go forward from that point. Ms. Petrie.
Yes, I'm the one who made the request, and so I'd like to publicly thank Ms. Busey for providing all this information.
Thank you. Mr. Weibel, were you going to say something in relationship to that? Okay, thank you. All right, so we'll move to item C unless there's something else on that structure.
The Emergency Management Agency requests to submit proposed new position to the Job Content Evaluation Committee. We talked about this at our last meeting, the changes that we've done already in that department. And so this is just a continuation of that initial request to begin to evaluate an assistant director for the EMA. Anything else?
Need your approval to take this to job evaluation, and upon your approval, they will meet and review this position and bring a recommendation back to you at your next meeting.
Moved by Mr. Betts. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Kurtz. Any other discussion on this going to job evaluation? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? That motion passes. Item D is the county clerk. Recommendation to remove the early application discount for county liquor license fee. Moved by Mr. Kurtz. Is there a second?
Thanks.
Second by Mr. Richards. Any discussion on this item? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? That motion passes. Thank you. Other business? Yes, sir.
I should have done this during announcements, but I want to congratulate our county clerk on another son.
Baby girl
was born yesterday, so.
Congratulations.
Born yesterday.
Gender, okay.
Okay.
I misinterpreted, but nonetheless, we know.
Congratulations to you. I'm an official grandmother. I just got a little baby. I'm very happy about that. I got a baby too. we don't have our chair's report to give to you at this moment, and we'll designate items for consent from policy, which is 1 through 5, items B, B2, B3. Oh, that's right. There was an abstention. So not B2. Sorry. B3 will be on consent. Oh, because it's a board. Okay. Let's see. We don't need to put anything on C item either. Just D. The change in the local license fee. That's all from policy. Thank you.
Good evening. For finance, amendments and transfers from the budget. Number one, budget amendment 1100014 for $3,000. This is out of the Developmental Disability Board. The November payment for professional fees was incorrect. So motion for approval by Brad, seconded by Al Kurtz. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Number two, a transfer, 1100003 for $6,377 on the Mental Health Board to cover personnel costs resulting from a position upgrade. So a motion for approval. By Al, seconded by Jan. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. From the addendum, an amendment 1100015 for $17,217 is an insurance reimbursement for repair of water damage at the nursing home. Motion by Brad, seconded by Al. Discussion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Child Advocacy Center, Children's Advocacy Center, is there any reason why we wouldn't want to take these in an omnibus fashion that anyone has? John?
I would move to take them in omnibus.
John is moving all three for approval on the bus, and second by Al. Is there discussion on any of these items? Patsy.
Mine is just an information question, and it may relate to the cycle of meetings of the county board and when these topics would come up. But I noticed the renewal of the violent crime victims proposal was turned in on the 4th of February, and now we're getting it. Can you explain why?
It's probably a timing issue and the way your grants ordinance and process works. Any department is able to go ahead and apply for a grant if they've missed a deadline, and I believe they probably would have missed the deadline for your February meeting, but they cannot accept the grant until the county board has approved the acceptance of the grant award when it's received. So if you did not approve this tonight, they would withdraw the application.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Next up, C, a hiring freeze waiver, physical plant, request to fill a custodian position detailed on page 114. Is there a motion for approval by Carol? Is there a second?
Second.
By Michael. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Next up, treasurer's report. Dan.
I'll be very quick. My report's in your packet. Just two things. General Corp's cash flow is looking good, and I really do believe we will be able to get into March before we have to borrow, which is a surprise to me. If you'd asked me a year ago, I said there was no chance of that happening. But thanks to Devin, her good ideas and good cuts, I think, and the help of all the departments certainly made a big difference. And also, say we got $230,000 in income tax from the state, which we should have gotten last October, so we're only 4 months behind, so things are moving forward. So I'd ask that my report be accepted and placed on file, please.
Is there a motion by Carol to do so? Is there a second by Brad? Any questions for Dan? Patsy?
Well, is he the appropriate person, or is Deb the questions that I raised during caucus? I don't want to waste anybody's time. I had a number of questions on the documents, so may I?
Absolutely.
Okay.
On my documents?
I think they are on
the table. Okay, sure.
This is auditor's report. The auditor isn't here.
Any questions for Dan?
Well,
I refuse to speak for him.
Okay. Is the report on the general corporate fund from you?
What page are we on?
That's Deb's.
That's Deb.
I refuse to speak for her as well.
Okay. All right. You're free.
We got Julie sitting back here too.
Excellent. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Tony did email me earlier, said he would not be able to make it this evening. Purchase is not following purchasing policy. We're not distributed. Motion to accept his monthly report and place on file. By Tom, seconded by Al. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Next up, Deb.
Fiscal 2011 General Corporate Fund Revenue Projection Report starts on page 136. I would say it is very early in the year. I don't call this much of a projection at this point because we really only have 1 month of revenue. I will comment, though, that on the revenue side, we did receive in February another quarter cent sales tax with an increase over last year. It was about a 3% increase. It was for the month of November. So that is a good indicator for the general corporate fund, second month in a row with an increase in that tax. Also, as Dan said, we received, again, this month income tax. And what's good about that is we are receiving it every month, even if it's 4 months behind. If we don't skip months again, that's going to be very beneficial to us. Local government revenue is, general government is also coming in on track, which a year ago it was falling pretty far behind. You can see that it is ahead of where we were last year, which is also a good indicator. And finally, on rents and royalties, you'll see that we look to be $400,000 positive for the year already, and that is because these are pretty fixed revenues, and we did receive the ILEAS rent payment, which was not a budgeted rent payment, so that line item is likely to end $400,000 positive this year. As you will recall, when we adopted that amendment to the lease, we knew this rent payment was coming in and identified that it should probably just remain in the fund balance to help rebuild the fund balance. So on the revenue side, that's about all I would have to say at this point. Expenditures, just basically at this point projecting that we'll spend what is budgeted, which places us pretty much maintaining the same fund balance.
questions. Chris?
Is the rents and royalties line item exclusively the alias lease, or are there other?
No, there are other rents and royalties in there.
Anything else on this report, Patsy?
On page 137, what does SLEP stand for?
SLEP, Sheriff's Law Enforcement. So those are all, they have a different classification. So that's basically all of the sheriff's staff who are deputized, both corrections and law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Other questions on this report? Okay, we'll move on to the change.
The budget change report is just documenting the changes that you have adopted to the 2011 general corporate fund budget since December 1st.
Questions? And Harrison Harris?
Is there for your information.
Motion to accept all three and place on file by Brad, seconded by Geraldo. Any discussion on them? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item 4 is a memorandum of understanding with AFSCME regarding administrative secretary position in the auditor's office. Is there a motion to approve? By Geraldo, seconded by Carol. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Next up, item 5, a resolution for the abatement and reduction of taxes heretofore levied for the payment of bonds. Is there a motion for approval? By Brad, is there a second?
Second.
By Stan. Discussion? Patsy?
Hey, I'm the one who asked questions on this, and nobody was able to explain it. I was advised to ask you.
And your question is probably, why are we doing this? Okay. Well, every single one of the bonds that are listed in this resolution are general obligation bonds, alternate revenue source. All general obligation bonds are backed by a property tax, but when you adopted these bonds, you stated you were going to pay them with an alternate revenue source. The courthouse bonds are paid from the quarter cent for public safety sales tax. The ERI bonds are paid with the 1 cent sales tax. The nursing home general obligation bonds are pledged the quarter cent sales tax, although they are now actually being repaid by a transfer from the nursing home to general corporate to cover the interest and principal payments on those. But as a result, you have to tell the county clerk to abate the property tax, which these bond ordinances require, because you in fact have the funds on hand to pay them from the alternate sources. If any of those alternate sources did not produce, the bonds still get paid. They get paid with property taxes. So this, we do this every February, and I imagine we always will, because I can't imagine that we will ever levy property taxes to pay these bonds. But that's why we go through this.
Other questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Who has the closed session quiz?
Yes, I move that we enter into closed session pursuant to 5 ILCS 120/2, parentheses C, 2, to consider salary schedules for one or more classes of employees. I further move that the following individuals remain present: County's Legal Counsel, County Administrator, elected officials and department heads, and the Recording Secretary.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Chris. Roll call, please.
Alex.
Yes.
Ammons.
Yes.
Anderson.
Yes.
Benzel.
Yes.
Berkson.
Yes.
Betts. Holderfield.
Yes.
James. Jay.
Yes.
Jones.
Yes.
Knott. Kurtz.
Yes.
Langenheim.
No.
McGinty.
Yes.
Michaels. Mosher. Nudo.
Yes.
O'Connor.
No.
Petrie. Quisenberry.
Yes.
Richards.
Yes.
Rosales.
Here.
Yes or no?
Yes.
Staff.
Yes.
Weibel.
Yes.
We're enclosed.
business in a manner to allow us to hold on to it.
Motion to move back into open session.
We'll wait until we're set up to record, right? That way we do this move. It's all in Kat's hands.
You need to do a motion to go back into open.
Oh, not to go back into open. Yeah. We're just back.
I'm not even saying that question.
Okay, item number 7 off of the finance agenda. Is there a motion for approval? By Ralph, is there a second? By Al. Any discussion on it? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
That motion carries. Is there any other business out of finance? There is no chair's report. The items for consent are everything from A, everything from B, C1, and F5. Chair has said it's okay for me to go ahead and look for approval of the closed session minutes of both October 12th of 10 and January 18th of 2011. Who made the motion? Steve, seconded by John. Any discussion on those minutes? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries, and we are adjourned. Thank you.